welcome to the Provider Podcast, coming from NHS Providers' annual conference and exhibition at the ACC here in Liverpool. I'm Adam Brimelow. This event, like no other, brings together senior leaders from across health and care, including trust leaders, of course, and politicians, national bodies. We've had Wes Streeting here, also Amanda Pritchard. And the programme, including about 100 speakers and panellists, has been put together on the theme of next generation. So it's a future and solutions focused feel here, going into issues like leadership for the future, digital innovation and AI, reducing inequalities, exploring sustainability and productivity, and improving care for children and young people. We've also got a big, busy exhibition space with more than 40 exhibitors and sponsors, and live theatres with presentations and discussions in train. So a really engaging ambience at what is a critical moment for the NHS heading into winter, with the budget just recently done and plans for the 10-year health plan starting to take shape. Well, the scale of the challenges is reflected in our State of the Provider Sector survey of trust leaders. The findings were a big talking point heading into day one of this two-day gathering. I'm joined now by NHS Providers Head of Media, Susan Ball. Susan, what were the main findings from the survey in terms of winter on the way?
Hi, Adam. Well, I think it's really interesting because winter is tough every year for the NHS, and this year was no different. So in terms of our survey, 96% of the trust leaders we surveyed raised concerns about seasonal pressures. They identified a number of risk factors, none of which will come as a surprise to our listeners. So worries about delayed discharge, social care capacity and acute bed capacity topped their list of concerns heading into winter.
And then looking further ahead, how optimistic were they about being able to meet the big constitutional standards like 18 weeks for routine planned treatment or 4 hours in A&E and so on?
Yeah. So again, this was actually one of the most surprise findings of the survey, but perhaps not surprising for trust leaders, depending on which way you look at it. And so this particular finding was that nearly three quarters of trust leaders that we surveyed, 100% of acute specialist trust leaders, and again, all of ambulance trust leaders who responded to the survey, thought it was really unlikely that the NHS would meet those constitutional standards. And this was really interesting because it's a key Labour pledge. And again, so quite unsurprising that that was the story that the press led on when they were picking up our survey.
But they were positive, weren't they, about support for the big three shifts, hospital to community, analogue to digital, and treatment to prevention.
Absolutely, they were really supportive of it. And again, the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care raised it in his speech today about that left shift. So again, like you said, from hospital to community, analogue to digital, and treatment to prevention. And yeah, he also talked about creating that neighbourhood health service. And our survey showed that trust leaders really are behind providing care closer to home. So there is backing for the Secretary of State's agenda, and they're really keen to play their part in doing that.
And Susan, in terms of improving patient care, what were the main areas they'd like the government to prioritise?
Again, I don't think there are any surprises here, and these have been issues that NHS providers has really been pushing on behalf of our members. So the top one was around capital investment in estates. So the latest figures show that there is a near £14 billion repairs bill. I mean, that is a huge maintenance backlog, whichever way you look at it. So trust leaders know that if you invest in the bricks and mortar of the NHS, you really can revolutionise patient care, you can boost productivity, and really importantly, you can improve patient and staff safety. I mean, it's a no-brainer really, isn't it? And then the second was around investment in digital. They really want to see that. And then thirdly, social care. Again, no surprises. We've said time and again that NHS and social care are two sides of the same coin. If you basically want to get the NHS back on track, invest in social care.
Susan Ball there. And this conference is a big media event. We have about 20 leading health reporters and correspondents here in Liverpool following the twists and turns, including several from our event media partners, Health Service Journal. I'm pleased to say the editor of Health Service Journal, Alistair McClellan, joins me now. Alistair, attention here during the conference inevitably is focused on what's been said in the keynote speeches. We had Amanda Pritchard, and we've also just been hearing from the Health and Social Care Secretary, Wes Streeting. Was there anything from Amanda's speech that particularly struck you?
I think the most significant thing in Amanda's speech, which was a good speech and I think well received, was the announcement about the clarification of the roles of various organisations, agencies, trusts, integrated care boards in the centre. It is something that Trust Chief Executive, NHS Provider members have been asking for a long time. In fact, in our CEO roundtables that we do each year, the one we did last year, specifically, that was the ask. They wanted an operating model which had greater clarity around the particular roles of parts of the system. And that clarity has now come, and I think that is very welcome and long overdue.
And then in terms of Wes Streeting's speech, there was a lot of build-up to it, and in the end got a lot of attention focused on his message for leaders. At face value, a very tough message that he was not going to tolerate failure. Your sense of how different the world's going to feel post that speech?
So what we saw there is a classic piece of political theatre. The press releases that are put out before the speech, in this case, there are press releases that put out on Monday embargoed for Tuesday and Tuesday embargoed for Wednesday, so they had a double hit, were very negative ones. They were headlined both along versions of no more rewards for failure. When he turned up and gave his speech, he did the classic thing, which was, I don't know why people are taking or, you know, are saying that I'm attacking managers. I'm not. I'm supporting them to do their best. I'm saying that they must, you know, we must get rid of the failing ones because they are damaging NHS management. But what I'm really about is backing NHS managers to succeed. And so you get that classic thing where he gets their newspaper headlines, which he got very well, and then comes to this group of people that he supposedly have you go at and says, actually, I love you. Of course, it's a lot more complicated than that, and there are various reasons for it. But I think that's effectively what we see. Did he announce anything new in relation to sanctions on failing managers? No, he did not. The pay framework, which might lead to, those who might, underlined, managers not doing well, not getting a pay rise. That's part of the forthcoming very senior managers' pay framework that has been announced as about to be published by about three health secretaries over about the last sort of 4 years. So we shall see. Do failing managers, failing chief executives get moved on? Clearly they do. The listeners to this podcast can think off the top of their head two very high-profile examples of that taking place. Are there league tables already in existence? Clearly they are, the soft classifications, to name but just one. So nothing he said was new. It was a classic piece of political theatre to get a good coverage in the local, in the national media beforehand, and then to come and give a bit of love. No, I've been misunderstood. What I really love you. I just want to get rid of the bad apples because they're harming you as much as the service.
Okay, so this conference, obviously a quite key moment as we move on with a new government. We've had the budget. We've got build up now to the 10-year health plan. We've got winter round the corner. And there are a lot of very familiar themes in terms of the concerns we've been hearing about from trust leaders in terms of, you know, concerns over winter pressures, what that's going to mean for performance, finances, quality and safety. As we try to look ahead to the next generation NHS, to a hopefully brighter future, are you seeing many shafts of light, Alistair, that give you grounds for optimism that this can be the turning point that people are hoping to be able to engineer in the coming months?
Well, what do they say? It's darkest before the dawn. Amanda, in her speech, stressed that in financially, it would be even tougher next year than it is this year. And this year is astonishingly tough. In some cases, I would say ridiculously tough in terms of the various cost improvement programs that trusts have had to save up. But I do believe that we are so I'm going to say something. So the positive thing is, I think we're at the bottom of the curve. I don't think things are going to get any worse than they're going to get than they will be over the next 15 months or so. It's going to be very tough for 15 months or so. But you know, the 10-year plan and that, so the spending review in May next year, which will come alongside the 10-year plan, I think that is the most important event in the NHS's history since the 2002 budget and the publication of Delivering the NHS Plan, a policy document, because this is a government that has got to do something about the improvement of the NHS. You could almost say that that's its, you know, its purpose, its USP. If it can't improve the NHS, and quite significantly, then really all its other missions sort of fall away. Of course, improving the economy is part of it, but the two things you yoke together is improve the economy to improve the NHS. So the very fact that they have to do something, and they desire to do it, and they've got some good people, you know, clever minds focusing on it, and there are some important things that haven't been done that are seriously being talked about, greater proportion of care in primary care and community care, and the sense that you will have to realign incentives to do that. So I think those kind of things do give us the concept of hope. Is now one we can entertain, if I might put it like that. There is light at the end of the tunnel, but the tunnel's got some way to go yet.
Alistair McClellan there from Health Service Journal. So let's give the last word to NHS Providers Chief Executive, Sir Julian Hartley, who, as you probably know, is going to be on the move soon to take over as Chief Executive at the Care Quality Commission. Julian, you talked a lot in your speech about the inspiration and lessons you take away from your visits. What are the most important lessons?
Well, I would say, Adam, that for me, I think the most important lessons are about how frontline teams are supported and motivated to deliver great care for patients, and that what I've seen in many places is just how trust leaders enable that. The focus, particularly post-pandemic and the shockwaves that the NHS has experienced, and the impact on the demand, on mental health, on well-being, all of that, of course, has a significant consequence for frontline staff. So the role of trust leaders in supporting those teams and ensuring that they are valued, supported, and empowered really to continue to make an extraordinary difference to the lives of patients and service users. That, I think, and I've seen so many examples of that, is the point of real inspiration for me as I visit many trusts in different sectors of the NHS.
And Julian, just reflecting on this conference, the conversations you've had here, the sessions you've attended, were there any standout kind of light bulb moments illuminating the way ahead for the health service?
Yes, there were. There were lots, Adam. I really enjoyed the sessions over the course of this conference, from Amanda Pritchard's speech yesterday, which highlighted the importance of patient safety, quality and experience, but also, crucially, that every organisation needs to be an improving one, how to make continuous quality improvement central to how the NHS works. That resonated with the session this morning on improving patient safety, with Bill Kirkup and Henrietta Hughes setting out really clear lessons for the way that safety cultures need to be embedded across the service to make a real difference for patients, particularly in maternity care, of course. And it was great listening to Nicky Moffat. I thought that she brought some really strong, practical, real-world ideas and experience to the challenges of senior leadership from a different sector. And I could tell, looking around the auditorium, people really responding to that.
And just to put into context, that Nicky Moffat, she came from that military background, didn't she? And at face value, you might think, well, that's a world apart from the world of NHS leadership. But you sensed a strong sense of relevance there to the experiences colleagues are having as they lead their organisations.
I did. I think there are many parallels, actually, not least the importance of the bandwidth of leadership, of motivating teams to be high performing, of supporting your people, and of not, one thing really struck me about not radiating stress, the importance of finding gaps in your schedule to recharge. And as a leader, that is so important. That point she made about self-care for leaders, I thought resonated, particularly a time of great operational challenge across the service.
Yeah. And Julian, as you prepare to move on, what's your ask of trust leaders in terms of the work that you have done here at NHS Providers? And I know you want to take it forward to drive improvement and improve care for patients.
So I would make the ask of trust leaders just really to keep the faith with a lot of what they're doing at the moment, the true north of quality and safety, the importance, as I said in my opening speech, that it's vital that we don't allow just the kind of financial challenges to eclipse the importance of quality and safety. They are two halves of the same coin in terms of higher quality care costing less, the sort of true north of patient experience, outcomes and effectiveness. They don't need me to tell them this because I know many of them very well and know just how incredibly hard they're working to deliver all this. I think I'd want to say from an NHS provider's perspective that we're in their corner and we're here to support them, and that's been a really important part of the job, providing resources and support to help them do their jobs. And if I think about what I'm heading into, just making sure that we've got that level of engagement and support to enlist trust leaders and clinicians in the business of good regulation, and making sure that we continue to understand and recognise how difficult and challenging these jobs are, but the fact that support is there, and we need to create an overall culture across the service which is really about learning and improvement. And that, I think, will find a positive response amongst all trust leaders.
So you're about to begin a new chapter in your leadership career. Of course, you embarked on a new chapter when you came to NHS Providers following many years as a trust leader. When you reflect back on this period with NHS Providers, what are your thoughts and reflections about the time you've had here?
So first and foremost, Adam, I'd say a huge regard and respect for the team of people that I've had the privilege of working with in NHS Providers. Saffron, yourself, the whole team, been fantastic. I've learned a huge amount about the media, about policy and communication, and the way that we take our members' views and amplify those and offer a voice, but also influence at the most senior levels, and just the importance of the calibration of speaking truth to power, but maintaining that influence and understanding that you have to be in the conversation to make a difference. And I think the work that I've seen the team do on a whole set of issues, whether it be the State of the Provider Sector Survey, our Providers Deliver series, which champions the great work that trusts are doing, our work on regulation, of course, all of that adds up together with all of the different networks that we have in each of the sectors, I think, to a really comprehensive set of support for our organisations that, you know, to be frank with you, I wasn't aware of the depth of some of that in my previous role. Obviously, I used NHS providers a lot, but seeing the work that goes on in ambulance, community, mental health, as well as the depth of expertise in the team on a range of policy areas, that's been great. And it's been a privilege to lead NHS providers and to work with all of you as valued colleagues. And I would say that the work that NHS providers does is critical at this point with the 10-year plan consultation, with the major changes that the NHS is aiming to deliver, with the scale of the challenge in terms of operational improvements and the financial challenges. So never has it been more important to offer that voice, that influence and that support to our members.
Sir Julian Hartley, bringing to an end this special edition of the Provider Podcast, recorded here in Liverpool at NHS Providers Annual Conference and Exhibition. A reminder, as always, that you can join in the conversation and subscribe to the podcast by following us on X, formerly known as Twitter, and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast. Thanks for listening.